Welcome to Heartspeak Podcast, episode 36. What does it actually mean to be spiritual?
Welcome to the Heartspeak Podcast, where valuable insights are shared that bypass the mind and resonate with the heart. Listen, open your heart, become inspired, find the joy and fulfillment that awaits when you follow your heart. And now, here's your host, Dr. Christine Page.
I was listening to a conversation recently and someone was describing someone as extremely spiritual. They're so spiritual. I thought, what does that mean? What are they actually implying? And I said, what is to be spiritual? And they said, oh, well, he meditates 3 hours a day and he's a vegan, reads all these books and he has a spiritual guru. And that was their definition of spiritual. And I've heard that before, the definition being that which you do, following the rules that have become very commonplace, so commonplace that I tend to say that I don't want to be spiritual, because if it's defined by rules, then the very meaning for me to be spiritual is to flow with something new, to be in tune with something bigger than myself. And human rules don't fit into that category for me. So I tend to talk about the universe, or I'm speaking with the universe, or the collective, or the creatrix, something that is not necessarily just about a definition that I think has become very commonplace recently. So this is what I wanted to share with you on this podcast. But before we go there, I also want to talk about something that I've mentioned previously about how the planet Saturn and the planet Pluto are getting closer and closer together. It's called a conjunction. And they're only 3 degrees apart at the moment, which is actually very close for two big planets. So this energy that they bring in Capricorn when they get close together is becoming very pertinent now. And for any of you who are watching what's going on in Brexit in the UK, my own home country, this is very typical of the Saturn-Pluto energy. So reminding, Saturn is about structure, rules. It rules Capricorn. Capricorn is the sign of order, structure, integrity, accountability, responsibility, duty. So Saturn in Capricorn almost intensifies all those energies. And I think you can also see that structure is very good sometimes, but too much structure isn't good, too good for us. So we need to be able to flow between structure and chaos, as I spoke about recently, living on the edge of chaos, so that we can flow between the two. So something that becomes too dogmatic, too structured, too forced on other people is not good. And on the other level of Capricorn and Saturn is the ability to be accountable. So what I'm saying is, if you're going to stand and have rules, then you need to be accountable for the outcome or the results of that. It's nothing wrong with saying, this is my stand I'm taking, this is what I believe in, as long as you're accountable for your words and your actions based on those structures. And so we're also seeing things happen in other parts of the world where those who have done something or been something are not being accountable for their actions. And so along comes Pluto. Pluto is actually a goddess, not a god. Was only made a god during the times of the Greeks and the Romans, when they became Pluto and Hades, the god of the underworld. But in truth, it's only ever been goddesses in the underworld. And Pluto is really also the keeper of your gems, or the keeper of your treasures. So Pluto is saying, I have your treasures, but you have to own them. So she's bringing to the surface that which is rich inside of us. But at the same time, she's bringing to the surface those things we'd rather hide from other people. And so what we're also seeing is scandals. We're seeing things coming to the surface that need to be faced or be seen. And back in November 2008, or really the summer and then through to the November, we both saw Pluto going into Capricorn at that time, and Pluto transformed structures, broke down structures, which meant that we had the financial crash, the housing crash, etc. But at the same time, I always think of poor Tiger Woods, who everything came to the surface in November 2008, and his identity, his career crashed because of the scandals. So what am I saying? I'm saying I feel that things are going to come to the surface. We're going to see more scandals. We're going to see more things that have been done in secret being brought into the light, not necessarily just to be blamed, but to be accountable for it. If you've been doing it, then own it. And that is very good for this moment. But we're also going to see Saturn in Capricorn and Pluto in Capricorn, a readjustment of our power. So what's happening is, if we've put all our eggs in one basket, if we've believed in a religion, an organization, and we've given it our power, if you don't like the fact, you might say, oh, I don't, you know, they're bad people, they keep taking my power. But the opposite of that is, are you willing to own it? So fine, you don't want me to take your power? Here you are, have it back. And so it's a distribution of power, which sounds fabulous. Oh, I want to be empowered. Do you? Because with empowerment comes accountability. You can't blame anybody else. And so what's happening is, we're going to see this over and over again. Rather than setting up people as leaders and then pulling them down when they fail, we're really being asked, if you want to do that, do it. But are you willing to change and be accountable for that change? We're living in interesting times. And I wanted to share that with you because it has a lot to do with spirituality. There was almost a sense of, well, I'm more spiritual, you're religious, or you're not spiritual. I'm a better person. Are you? Is that what the definition of spirit is? And I wanted to just share that with you today, because I've been thinking about, what is spirit? What does it mean to be spiritual? When I was young, I was brought up in around the Spiritual Association of Great Britain. These were spiritualists. Some of you might be spiritualists. And this was to understand that the spirit continues after death. The idea that there are spirits around us that we can talk to, the communication with spirits, which was really where mediumship and channeling came to the surface, that there were wise beings, one would say, that spirit, in spirit, we would say that, in a different frequency, a different dimension, that could speak to us. I laugh because Uncle Joe has passed over. If he was an idiot on this plane, he's an idiot on that plane as well. Sorry, Uncle Joe, I don't have one, but I'm just giving you an analogy that just because someone's in spirit, it doesn't mean they're wise. And I also was involved with the Spiritual Association of Healing, so the spiritual healing. And spiritual healing was, in our definition, was not associated with any religion or denomination. So it was non-denominational. So I liked that, because it wasn't saying you have to believe in one religion or one God or one faith. You can receive healing without having to do that. That's the NFSH, and very much appreciate all of the work that all of these organizations do and did for me as a child. And as I came up through the ranks and understood spirit for myself, I probably understood it from the religious point of view, was the Trinity, the Father God, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, or the Holy Ghost. And that's how many people have understood it, is that it's a face of God, that spirit is a face of God, an understanding of it in that way. And that face of God was the action of God, or the activating force, that which flowed through. And I like to think that spirit is in everything that has life. So that includes maybe my chair I'm sitting on, or the flowers, or the animals, everything that we consider has a life force. Not necessarily a heartbeat, but a life force has spirit flowing through it. which should include the planets and or anything else. Many a time we aligned it also to the idea of angels or spiritual masters or ascended masters, that which had spirit or energy or the divine spark flowing through it. And that, I think, is how the Trinity was seen. Many times, it also, I think around the Greek times, the word Sophia was given to it. Sophia was the feminine face of God. And Sophia was seen as that which brought life or feminized in many ways what we would consider the feminine. But it's interesting on reading this and very much around the Gnosmos ideas, the ideas that were out there in the Greek times, was that she was the fallen part of God, or she was the piece that created, had failed, and therefore brought into life the soul, the physical body, the material body. So it was interesting that around that time where there was an increasing suppression of the feminine, poor Sophia fell from grace, and she was the cause of why we have a material world, why we have a physical body. Not very kind. And so Sophia, where she should have been known as the she who carries wisdom, which was the meaning of the word, or why we have the word philosopher, came from Sophia. She eventually became the fallen one, the one who created chaos in our spiritual life, where we had to actually have a physical form, a more chaotic emotional body. I hope you're seeing this theme, that it really was around that time where anything feminine, including emotions, chaos, periods, being a female, was somehow a lower form of God or the divine. And therefore, she was blamed for causing that. There you go, another blame. But truly, in the higher level, Sophia was seen as the wisdom keeper, the keeper of wisdom. And it was to Sophia, or to the feminine, that the masculine would come in order to receive the knowledge of what action needed to take place. So she was like Maat, who was the Egyptian goddess, who was about fairness, retribution, redistribution, not retribution. She was the one who looked at what needed to be balanced. That was Maat as well. And I think that, again, Maat was seen as this powerful being who distilled energy to the masculine to bring about action. But she never changed herself. And again, that was lost over time. The female figure, or the feminine energy, was the one who was the keeper of the wisdom, the keeper of what was needed to happen for the next seven generations of survival. She was the one who could tap into the grid. She was the one that could enter mystery. And it was a perfect balance between the feminine, who knew these things, and the masculine, who was the active, the doer. And we have that within ourselves. The feminine within us, you could say, taps into our intuition, gives us the knowing of what we need to do. It's our masculine that does it, but they work so much in harmony with each other, both being spiritual. However, if I just go back to my analogy of the fallen Sophia, she was the one who became matter, the word matter coming from mater, mother, material. And she was then seen as not spiritual. So now we have these words that say spirit and matter. Okay, now we've done it. Now we have words that say, oh, this is to be spiritual, this is to be human and matter, which is really where it all got very disruptive. I'm very happy for it to be masculine, feminine, if you want, but it is the flow that really was the spirit became, I'm going to say, masculinized, and matter became feminized. And you're seeing where my hands are. Spirit was high, matter was low. And matter was always wanting to reach spirit, which really wasn't the original understanding of the Trinity, that it, in many ways, it was the father and mother who gave birth to the child, the son. That was that's how it is. And both had wisdom in them, and both had intelligence in them, and both had spirit flowing through them. Hope you're following me with this. So here we go again. So if I say that spirit is the activating force, it's the movement. Others have described this as wind or breath, flow. Sometimes it's aligned to water. So it's that which flows through something. That's fabulous. So I love the idea that spirit is air, spirit is wind. But then I'm saying, well, who's defining where that flows? Now we have a different issue. So if you want to see spirit as the arrow that flies through the air, or even the water that flows, who's deciding? Who is the bowman? Who is the actual archer? Or even the bow? Who is directing the bow? Who is setting the intention? And to me, that's where we get back to this thing called the head. That so many times our belief systems are directing the flow of spirit, directing the flow of energy. So it's wonderful to be a healer and you've got the flow of the divine flow moving through you, or maybe as a medium or an intuitive, the divine. But is that true? Have I reached outside myself to be able to make that energy flow? Or am I only speaking from my own ego? And a lot of what we would call spiritual understanding was about seeing something bigger than you, tapping into something bigger than you. The mystical different types of mysticism, such as Sufi, Kabbalah, all are about going inwards to discover your divine self, to connect with the divine, to release your inner, your outer identities, to enter mystery, to not get caught up in your ego. So to be truly spiritual wasn't just about meditating, although if meditating was to lose yourself, then so be it. But what's really hard for us today is that we're so still directed by someone telling us how we should do this. And so now there are books on how to meditate and how to be mindful and how to do this, all of which, no disrespect, I write books. But what we're looking for is, what is your unique way to find this? And I feel that, first of all, we had the New Age movement come in the 70s. And I was very excited by that. All of you, or all of us who have been brought up with all those ideas. We, mysticism and mediumship and healing and energy medicine and talking with angels or doing psychic things, was all very exciting. The times of Kris Kringle or Shirley MacLaine, and wonderful, the times of Finhorn, just magic was happening. And that was the New Age movement. It was saying, be unlimited, step outside what you believe you are, become more than you are. Be part of the divine flow. Fabulous. But then it became reductionist again. It became, and if you want to do it, follow me. Very Piscean. I am the way. I'm the way that can get you there. And once again, there were rules. Okay, and if you're going to be spiritual, you have to be vegetarian. You have to be vegan. You mustn't. You must be a pauper. You must live in poverty consciousness. You must be in service to other people. You must pray, you must meditate, or you mustn't have bad thoughts. You should care for other people. There's a whole liturgy. And I've had people say to me, oh, you're not very spiritual. And I've had to almost say to them, okay, what is your definition of spiritual to define that I'm not one? Oh, you're not very caring, or you don't do this enough, or you don't. My goodness, there are more rules in the New Age movement than in any other movement. And you might as well be back with religion. And even things like wrapping yourself in a white light. I remember talking to a group to say that the greatest white light that might protect you is your own inner light. And then people went, yeah, but what about the white light? Shouldn't I just have wrapped myself in a white light? And then someone said, oh no, you have to do it this way. You have to touch this elbow and touch your nose and hit your head. oh my goodness, the rituals that have got lost in now the New Age movement, the spiritualist movement or spiritual movement. Crazy. Ritual comes from fear. I love ritual, which is about setting my rhythm, but not when it's fear-based. If we have fear-based rituals, we are not connected to the divine love. This is not the way, in my mind, to go. Ritual, prayer, which is coming from fear, coming from not good enough, not, I don't deserve love, I don't deserve to be healed. It's man-made. That's not God-made. That's not divine love. And during those 70s, I got very much involved in holistic medicine. I was part of the British Holistic Medical Association back in the late 70s. I loved it. I'd come home. This is who I was. Yes, let's talk about integration of mind, body, spirit in medicine. And I would say that while I was a GP, orthodox medicine, I was being holistic. It's not something separate. I would care for the whole person as a general practitioner. I would care about their background. I'd care about their children. I'd care about what was going on in their emotional life that had perhaps needing to be expressed through illness. So I don't believe that there are doctors who are non-holistic and doctors and then practitioners who are. Again, reductionism, separation, polarization. But here I was in the late 70s saying, yes, let's look at the whole person. And what happened was we looked at the whole person, but then we divided the treatment up into three again. So if you're wanting to be treated spiritually, you learn yoga, meditation, mindfulness. If you want to be treated mentally or if your mind needs treatment, then you learn about psychotherapy or you do all the different psychotherapeutic results. If you want to look after your body, you go for a massage, et cetera, et cetera. And all of a sudden, we're reductionist again. The mind, body, spirit have become separated. So what I've been doing is putting the soul in the middle, like the flower, my flower with its many petals. The soul is in the middle. The soul is the director of my body. It is the director of my mind. It is the director of my spirit. And what is my soul? It is the unique part of me, but it is the unique part of the creatrix, the creative energy, the God, if you want to call it, goddess, the great mother, universe. I am a small part of that hologram. I am complete unto myself, and my job here is to express all that I am through the wisdom of my body, my mind, my spirit. In other words, it's not enough just to have spirit inside me or my soul connected to spirit, connected to the divine. It is also my expression that makes me who I am. And so now I'm looking at spirit from another point of view of what it is to be conscious. I prefer maybe now the word she's very conscious rather than she's very spiritual. Spiritual has a definition, as I say, which can be very limited. So to be conscious, the word means to know yourself, to know thyself. And wow, where did we hear that before? The Greeks, man, know thyself, to be whole. This isn't just to be conscious in the terms of mindfulness, in terms of being present, but being present with all aspects of yourself, not shutting any of them out. Not sending love and light to a part of yourself you don't like, or forgiving that part, or trying to cleanse yourself of that part. What about embracing everything you are? Spirit flows through everything. If you want to believe that, and I believe it, if spirit is in every part of you and spirit comes from the divine, why would you get rid of any part of you? I prefer to see it as everything is born from the Great Mother. Why would you ever feel that any part was not loved by her? She's given birth to it. It's all loved. So going back to meeting yourself, and every one of us has set up our lives so we can meet ourselves. Beautiful. So every one of your experiences, however difficult they are helping you to know yourself more fully. That doesn't mean that you're not hurt or disappointed or in pain. But if we can say, what am I finding of myself in this experience? It makes the experience worthwhile. Not to try and get rid of it or forgive it or, oh, I've got to get away from that horrible time. It is spirit. It is spirit flowing through that experience for you to have a relationship with some part of yourself. So I kind of see spirit as also a part that brings us together, that helps us to have a relationship with another part of ourselves. Just as I'm speaking to you through my breath is connecting to you. And it's through my breath that we are connecting, our spirits are connecting to each other. You're flowing into me as I'm flowing into you. So I hope that I have at least got you thinking about this word, to be spiritual. Maybe there isn't a to be, as if like this is what it is, because that very definition is stuck. It's not flowing. Maybe the only way I know that I'm in spirit or being spiritual is when there is flow and movement happening. Maybe when it's stuck, there's no spirit moving. There's no air. There's nothing growing, nothing changing. And one of the ways to make sure that you constantly change, guess what, is listen to your heart. Listening to your heart speak to you. Where am I stuck? And now I return to my Saturn in Capricorn. Where am I holding on to something that if I'm not careful is going to drown me? Where am I holding on to something through fear? Where am I flowing through joy, through love? Where am I scared of jumping? And spirit is all about movement. It is about the movement. There's nothing, and it's definitely not about polarization. There's no good or bad in terms of flow, but there is good or bad where we get stuck in a certain paradigm. So I'm sending all my love to you, my blessings. Continue to listen to your heart. Continue to listen to your intuition. And know that you are loved. Let spirit move through you, but let yourself be directed through the loving heart of spirit, the pure mind of spirit, not one which has become limited. And with that, I send blessings, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Heart Speak Podcast with Dr. Christine Page. Remember to check out other episodes in the podcast archive section on www.christinepage.com. And do share with friends, family, and colleagues. Join us next time for another edition of Heart Speak.